Quick question. Do your end users always, and I mean always, without exception, work on company-owned devices and IT-approved apps? I didn't think so. So how do you keep your company's data safe when it's sitting on all those unmanaged apps and devices? 1Password has an answer to this question. Extended Access Management. 1Password Extended Access Management helps you secure every sign-in for every app on every device because it solves the problems traditional IAM and MDM can't touch. Check it out at 1Password.com/XAM. That's 1Password.com/XAM.
Packet Pushers.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Packet Protector, the podcast at the intersection of networking and security. I'm Jennifer J.J. Manila here with Drew Conry Murray, and today we have a guest with us, Eric Keane, who's the principal security consultant at Secure Ideas. He's also a fellow IONS faculty and advisory capacity, which is an organization I'm involved with. And we have, I think, a really awesome lineup here in a discussion with Eric. So Drew and I have talked through with him about not everything, but a lot of things related to securing AD, some of the interactions going up and down with intro. If you're in the cloud and on-prem, even talked through, you know, some of the authentication with AD and the difference between the ticketing system of Kerberos and the challenge response of NTLM, which is actually kind of what got me thinking about this episode, Drew, because I saw Eric speaking at a B-Sides conference not too long ago, I guess last month.
Yeah, this was a great conversation because as a pen tester for Eric, Active Directory is literally the keys to the kingdom, but it's not just a question of going right to it. He's got to find ways to get to it. And we sort of talk about those ways to help you as you're thinking about protecting your AD or enter environment, how to do that. So we get into things like privileged access management, privileged information management, and all kinds of interesting conversations. Hacking the NAC.
Hacking the NACs, network access control, which is somebody who's implemented NAC for over 15 years. I'm definitely well aware of many of the vulnerabilities built into various NAC platforms, but interesting novel approach to some of the stuff they've done there. We talked about like when I use tiers, but he said compartmentalization of credentialing, like how is it appropriate to, you know, break apart accounts on the account access, hardening and using multi-factor or, you know, vaulting, brokered access, physical tokens. When does it make sense to do those things? And then we wrapped up at the end with a little bit about incident response as it relates to Active Directory when you're trying to recover from an attack. So we're covering a lot, Drew. Let's jump in. All right, Eric. Well, let's just dive into this because I know Drew and I are just drooling with so many questions here. So recently, you were giving a talk at B-Sides, which really intrigued me because it was centered around, you know, certain aspects of Active Directory and authentication. I don't work heavily in that space, you know, just enough to be dangerous in a lab, really. But I think our first question for us, maybe for the listeners, is Active Directory seems like for an on-prem infrastructure, that's kind of where the juicy bits are. So as a pen tester, is that kind of where you're starting or is that something you're driving towards?
Yes, Active Directory is absolutely a target for everybody. It is quite often the keys to the kingdom. You have more than 5 or 6 Windows devices, you know, and a couple servers, you're going to have Active Directory there. Mm-hmm. What makes it interesting is by default, even though, yes, there have been a few issues where there are, you know, zero-day exploits or problems that need to be patched, AD is actually secure on its own. You need to have an identity. You need to have an account before you can start interacting with it. So at least a minimum level of security there.
Yeah, can you dig into that? Because security by default and anything from Microsoft is not something I hear very often.
Oh, you have to go there. We have to start with the Microsoft bashing.
I do have to go there.
I was biting my tongue and I'm like, is Drew going to do it? Is Drew going to do it? And he did it.
I did it.
All right. I have to counterpoint that a little bit. Microsoft, it has historically had issues with security. And in my opinion, a lot of that has to do with something that, you know, Microsoft believes wholeheartedly in being able to have back support, right? Support the things forever. There's those wonderful videos where you have a guy who starts with DOS like 3 something and then promotes it to Windows 95 and all the way up to Windows, I think it was XP or further, which would still let you continue on to almost 11. So they try and maintain that back portability. But recently they've begun to really hammer that down. There have been announcements over the last couple of years where they are just going to slash entire features and things that have been used in the background forever for Windows security and just remove them. They are definitely moving more to that secure by default design. Mm-hmm. But yes, there have been problems. When Microsoft started with AD, they really did have that idea of, all right, shortly after they first released it, I'll admit it, 2000 had a couple of issues 24 years ago, but they corrected that pretty quick. The idea is it's supposed to be that central repository. It is supposed to be the place where you can have your Windows systems, or if you want Linux and Macs and everything else, come to get basic information and let you log into other devices on the network. Mm-hmm. And so the domain controllers are hardened more than a normal server by default. Uh-huh. You can do even more than what Microsoft has, and there are some great hardening guides from CIS and other groups out there that you can apply to them that will help. But they are more secure than a normal member server, and definitely more secure than a Windows workstation or client device. What happens, though, is that most people aren't Active Directory administrators. They are server administrators who do some Active Directory on the side or something like that. And people begin to ingrain problems in their environment. So it's not the domain controllers that are the initial problem. It's all those other systems and how people are logging into these other systems and what they're doing that start to really make the environment less secure. Your domain controllers are more secure, but still rely on the security of everything on your network, like your network in general, right?
Sure.
Whatever you have, the least secure device is going to be that problem that starts the downfall of your castle. And that's what happens. So when we're doing pen testing or we're thinking like an attacker, our goal is to get a foothold on your network somehow and then begin to see what we can do to get credentials for Active Directory, get a user identity. And this is where, once again, we start seeing some inherent Windows functionality that begins to get us that information easier than maybe you want.
And is this usually a user, a device, or some combination of those depending on the environment?
It could be either way. So I like to say computers are people too when it comes to Active Directory. It's true. And a lot of people don't realize that. When you have a Windows device that is joined to Active Directory so you can log into it with your user ID, it has an identity. It has the ability to interact and start doing things as if it was a user. So if I can compromise a device because it's missing a patch or it's running a service in a bad way, you know, like administrator on that box, very common misconfiguration, anything like that. Uh-huh. As soon as we own that device, we now have some access to AD. Hopefully we can't write to it, although we have had some wonderful situations where you find that one box that's been given the ability to reset passwords for people and suddenly the environment's yours altogether, one stop. But typically it's just read access. That's what most people should have, is the ability to read information. AD is a directory. It's meant there to be read so that you can find what you're looking for.
Okay, so as an attacker, then your first goal is find an entry onto the network. You're not immediately driving toward AD, but you're looking for ways, hopefully, to jump to it, you know, using other systems as intermediaries.
Exactly. That is our goal. We absolutely want to get to AD. And sometimes during a pen test to try and save time, all right, pen testing is expensive. There's no doubt about that. We want to give the best benefit we can for our clients. So what we will typically do at Secure Ideas is we're going to do two things at the same time. We're going to say, we're going to assume you've had a breach. Please give us a set of non-permissioned credentials. Give me a user ID that has no special benefits and a password for it so we can start acting as if we compromised something, but we're going to be trying to compromise at the same time. And that's not because we won't be able to do that second part. It's just trying to get through all of the finding the juicy bits out there as quickly as we can and moving to save you time and therefore cost.
Okay, so you get the toehold, the sort of the gimme, but then it's up to you to sniff the network or whatever to find ways to penetrate further.
Exactly.
I have to ask this at this point without being too specific, directly or indirectly, meaning you or somebody that you know of, what's the most interesting like entry or pivot point device or thing?
This is an interesting one. So for me, my favorite attack that I love to do is all about leveraging an older authentication protocol in Active Directory in Windows. So really high, really fast, just to go through it, Microsoft has two main authentication protocols. One is Kerberos, and that is about passing tickets back and forth through the network. It's kind of like a passport system or driver's license. You aren't sending passwords or encrypted passwords typically. The fallback then is called NTLM. It's been around for a long time. It has problems. It's challenge and response. So anytime an attacker can relay NTLM authentication, they can pretend to be somebody else. Very common attack, one that we use all the time. And my favorite one that we have done is through a NAC device, believe it or not. So lots of clients have NAC. You plug in your device on the network and you don't get an IP address. So as an attacker, step one is I want to get on the network. So I'm going to go look at your printer. I'm going to print out its configuration. I'm going to steal its MAC address and tell my attack device, this is your MAC address. And I'm going to steal that printer's IP. I'm going to unplug it and I'm going to become it. For many NAC solutions, that's enough to get a toehold. There are a whole bunch of solutions, though, that will then query your device to say, are you really this printer? Right? It's not just, sure, you say it is. Prove it to me. And so those have an identity in Active Directory because it wants to authenticate to that system to get that info. Typically, it's an administrator on all of the Windows devices. And in most cases, it's also an administrator on every other Windows device out there. So when we plug into the network and we get that IP address and the NAC solution comes along to query us, it hits our box because we are not part of the domain. It can't do that first level authentication. It can't use Kerberos. It has to fall back to the less secure one. Mm-hmm. We use those credentials, send them to some other device and become administrator over there. And even if, like happened to us multiple times, we get kicked off the network immediately because it says you're not really that printer, it doesn't make a difference because we created that shell or that other communication path on that remote device. And now we're an administrator over there on a very trusted server, right? So it's twofold.
Oh, that's sneaky.
Yes. And then, of course, we get kicked off and all we do is we grab another device, right? Or an IP phone or something and steal its MAC address and IP address. And actually, that is the biggest downfall of most environments, is that administrators don't have enough identities in the environment. Way back when, people used to have one identity. This is going way before Active Directory. You'd have one identity that you use for maybe email and everything, and you used on other devices to do administrative functions. That is bad practice, has been known to be bad practice for a long time. And what happened is people got two identities. So now I have a normal user and I have an administrator, and it is an administrator everywhere. And that's the problem, right? If I can get that one account, which is pretty easy to do, we are admin everywhere, not just on that device or a group of devices. It's everywhere.
So pretty much game over at that point.
Pretty much game over. The big thing that happens is, how many hoops do I have to jump through, or devices do I have to compromise to get that set of credentials? That's our goal as an attacker or a pen tester, right? In real life, unless you have a severe problem on your network, most likely somebody is going to click a link, they're going to get phished, install something on their workstation, and the attacker is going to try and pivot from there, see what they can find and move from that place. Or you'll have an application exposed to the internet, an attacker manages to gain a foothold through that application onto the server, once again, starting on that device. And then if people log in with the wrong credentials, it's easy. If you start separating them out so that an administrator has one account to use on workstations when they need to do something to fix it versus just running it. So administrative account on those laptops. Then they have a separate one for servers and then a separate one for domain admin, the highest level permissions. Basically, there's some others, but what everybody is trying to get in Active Directory, if you have those separate and you don't let them cross mingle on the wrong type of device, you've created barriers that should be nigh impossible to get over.
Can you talk about that a little bit more? How would I go about sort of setting up that kind of environment? Because the issue with identity management is it gets very complicated very quickly.
It does. And operations people hate me whenever I tell them, you need more than two accounts. The ops people are instantly wanting to flip tables and yell at me, throw tomatoes, etc. But I've lived through this multiple times. I've worked at smaller organizations like Secure Ideas, and I've worked at some very, very, very large organizations. And it's always a problem. But yes, the idea is you want as many accounts as you feel appropriate for your environment.
I guess so. I feel like what you're saying is kind of counterintuitive, because you said the problem was that I have, you know, sort of, I am able to use this workstation credential, but then also a separate credential that gives me elevated privileges. Aren't I just making more of that problem if I have multiple identities?
Yes and no. You are causing one problem where you as an administrator need to have knowledge of those different accounts, right? That's why everybody gets upset. But if I have a privileged account for workstations, and it can only be used on workstations, it can't then be used on servers, which are considered more sensitive and should be treated in a more secure manner, right?
Okay.
And then if I have a separate account that I can only use on servers, hopefully there's no way to cross from workstation to server.
Okay.
Then you have another one that you would use for managing Active Directory, and it would only be used on Active Directory servers or domain controllers. And then you have that barrier again, right? You have the wall or a moat separating those different levels of devices.
So I shouldn't have a privileged credential that lets me have administrator or domain access on workstations and servers and Active Directory. Those should all be separate things. Okay.
They should be separate things.
I'll be back. I need to go do some things real quick.
Okay.
Okay. Like change my permissions.
Oh. Yeah, oh no. Oh no.
No, but I am curious, you know, because again, kind of like peripherally having to co-manage, you know, environments like this, it seems like there is identity sprawl. I'm air quoting because I don't know the right word for this, where there's service accounts and these kinds of accounts and machine accounts and shared credentials. And is some of that, like, are there classes of products as we get into like zero trust privileged access management that broker, like, is some of that built in? Is it different in intra versus on-prem AD? What are ways to make this less painful?
So if we're talking a Microsoft-centric environment, which not everybody has, most people have bought third-party tools of some kind. CyberArk, right, is the big one out there for privilege access and identity management. That can help. And there are ways of doing it. But in a true just, I have a Windows environment without third-party products, it is separate identities that you have to maintain and not let cross in any way, shape, or form. There's no concept of stepping up or increasing my privileges temporarily in a Windows environment. When you log in, that's what you have. And actually, another fun tidbit, if your incident response policy is we see that somebody is added to this new privileged group and you just remove them, that does not remove the privileges that they have if they are on a device at that moment. When you log into a Windows device, you have the permissions that you got when you logged in, unless it does some refresh, like you log out, log back in, lock the screen, unlock it, things like that. It doesn't refresh it. You have those permissions. So I was testing a client. They had a very secure cardholder data environment. They had a less secure corporate environment. We compromised the corporate environment. I got high-level permissions, and I got into this running battle with their SOC because they would just remove me from a group. But because I had already logged in, I could just do whatever I wanted continuously. They never found out where I was and forced the log off to remove me.
You have just like a mouse jiggler to keep the screen from locking or something at that point?
Sure, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Just don't lock it. Don't let it lock. Yes. That is a problem with Windows environments, right? You have those permissions and they stay that way. CyberArk, other tools like that, that maintain those accounts in some third way, they are resetting the passwords. You have to log in through them before you can get the passwords, check them out, et cetera, can help limit that to some degree, depending on how you implement it, but not in a Windows environment. In Entra, depending on what license you have purchased, you may or may not have the capability to do that privileged access management right now. Mm-hmm. And that's actually one of the problems we see quite often when we're doing tests that have on-prem and Azure at the same time or Entra. Uh-huh. They've learned the hard lessons where we need to have these separate accounts for on-prem, but we moved to Entra and we forgot about it. And now we just have one account again that lets us do everything in Entra. And that could be a serious problem, especially if you don't have settings that require an MFA check for those privileged accounts to be used at any point in time. Many orgs will say, oh yes, we have MFA turned on. You need to use the authenticator and get checked if you're logging in from this other location. But if you're on-prem and you're on our network, we're just going to bypass that and let you go right through, right? And that can cause all sorts of issues very quickly for your Azure environment.
That does anticipate a question I had. I wanted to know if you have done much pen testing work with Entra ID. And if so, does it seem like everybody's just sort of making the same mistakes that they did with AD, or is it a whole new set of mistakes? What's your perspective?
So in a lot of cases, people started moving to Entra very quickly and didn't necessarily think about how to set it up. And so we see the perpetuation of problems or that regression that is changing. And actually, that's one of the big things that Microsoft is just enforcing, depending on your environment. One of the things where I said Microsoft is trying to be more secure by default, they're running through tenants and making a shift where it says, if you're going to log in to an admin console, whether that's through PowerShell and the CLI through the backend or to the console itself for Entra, you have to do an MFA check.
You mean one of the like 18 different consoles for Entra? Yeah.
Yeah, that change all the time. And where it's kind of like the Microsoft licensing model where today this isn't included, but tomorrow it is. And
or not. Or the other way around.
Yeah. Trying to keep up with that is a job on its own. And I feel sorry for anybody who tries to maintain a license agreement with Microsoft.
Yeah, I'm going to throw this in here too, because those of us who have some touch into this, and you know, especially a lot of the small and smaller mid-sized organizations with, you know, listeners in those areas, you do the best you can do, and you're used to managing Microsoft on-prem. One of the organizations I was with, we actually hired a Microsoft-specific, you know, security partner to deal with this, and still, we got a couple months into a hybrid you know, on-prem and intra before I fully understood what was syncing between the two. At that point, we had like major, you know, let's call timeout. We basically rolled back out of everything and just nuked what we had built in the cloud and started back over natively, manually moving assets that needed to be there so that they were natively connected into Entra instead of on-prem and syncing up. And even in a small organization, I mean, it was unmanageable. I don't know how a large organization handles that securely. It was just a hot mess. Stuff was syncing all over the place. Even it was unidirectional and stuff was here that shouldn't have been there. It was not good.
And so that's very common situation that you just described. I see in many places where you want your normal user accounts to be syncing and normal workstations. And that's it, right? Don't be syncing privileged accounts, please, right? That you shouldn't need to.
One of them, Eric, was a machine account tied to an application running a NAC. Now, it was a lab.
Okay.
It was in the lab part of the environment, but still, I was like, this is not good.
Nope. And what happens is that is a situation where maybe your Active Directory environment has not been built in a way to allow that syncing to occur nicely.
Yeah.
Without getting too technical about AD and how you build it, there are ways of grouping devices. It's called an organizational unit, very old LDAP term. And it allows you to put things, whether that's users, computers, whatever you want, groups, and logically group them. The standard really of doing that grouping is I want to change security on them, or I want to apply a policy setting. But that guidance isn't necessarily straightforward or stated in that way. And people build OUs for all sorts of reasons. And then you get Active Directory environments that you can't tell what is necessarily what or how it's supposed to be there. And everything's jumbled together. And then, yes, you start syncing everything because either a third party comes in and says, I don't know, let's just sync it all. It's okay. Or even the people who manage it don't necessarily know how to limit that, right? Just, I only care about things in this OU, like my user accounts, or doing other things. OU is the simplest way of filtering, but you could do other things like special tags or information and attributes, but OU is the simplest way. And yes, suddenly you synced almost everything into Entra. And then if it's even worse for some people, you do self-service password reset, or you allow syncs to come back on-prem. And now, even though you think your on-prem might be secure, we get into Entra, we make changes in Entra, and it comes back down into on-prem, and we're good. So yes, there are all sorts of potential ways of going back and forth.
Let's pause for a message from today's sponsor, 1Password. Imagine your company's security is like the quad of a college campus. There are nice brick paths between the buildings. Those are the company-owned devices, IT-approved apps, and managed employee identities. And then there are the paths people actually use, the shortcuts worn through the grass to the actual straightest line from point A to B. Those are the unmanaged devices, shadow IT apps, and non-employee identities like contractors. And most security tools only work on those happy brick paths, but lots of security problems take place on the shortcuts. 1Password Extended Access Management is the first security solution that brings all these unmanaged devices, apps, and identities under your control. It ensures that every user credential is strong and protected, every device is known and healthy, and every app is visible. 1Password Extended Access Management solves the problems traditional IAM and MDM can't. It's security for the way we work today, and it's now generally available to companies with Okta and Microsoft Entra, and in beta for Google Workspace customers. Check it out at 1Password.com/XAM. That's 1Password.com/XAM. And now back to the podcast.
So we've been talking about things like privileged access management. And I know Entra ID does support PIM, and maybe it is a license that you have to pay for.
It is. Unfortunately, it's a P2 license for Entra ID.
But I'm curious, in general, does something like privileged access management or privileged identity management make a pen tester's job harder? Or is it just like, well, we'll find a different way?
It should.
Or easier.
Yeah, or easier. That would be bad.
Yeah, as always, it's about how you put a product in, okay? And this is where, yet again, we see some common things that begin to lower the security in the environment. So we had a client, they were a financial services group, and we've seen it with other groups as well, not just financial services, but we've seen it all over the place where they introduce a vault for privileged access management, and you need to log into this vault, and it manages all the accounts for you. That's great. You have to realize, though, that you have moved your security from AD, right? Keys to the kingdom aren't here necessarily, they are,
yeah,
but they're over here.
Uh-huh.
And if you allow users to just log right in, or not even log in because it's tied to AD again, which has happened, it's tied to AD and I just get Jimmy's low level account and I just look at that vault over here and it lets me in and I see all of their credentials, you've weakened your security, right? Or if you let them log in without an MFA check, you have not increased your security, right? You've just shifted it off to the side and let me or an attacker become privileged with just normal user account again. So the key things, if you're going to do a vault of some kind or privilege access management, you need to be sure that it's not synced password-wise or has MFA or some other check on it before they can log in and get to those credentials. And if you're talking about highly privileged credentials, my preference, and once again, operations people hate me when I say this, is I shouldn't be able to check that out on my own. There should be some workflow that says, I need my domain admin creds. Somebody else should approve it for me.
That's a hard pill to swallow.
It is.
Because we're used to just having, you know, root, admin, whatever credentials for everything. We move through our day and our work just willy-nilly doing stuff. But I think, you know, the past several years have taught us that's just not okay. I think it's to protect the shift in how we're going to be issuing, you know, credentials or accessing them and brokering them like that. It's not a, oh, you don't trust me, but it's to protect us just as much as anybody else, right? As much as the organization as well.
No one wants to be picked out, even if the pen testers don't know or whoever. You don't want to be the credentials that cause the downfall of your environment, right? You don't want to be there. And I will tell you, reading it in a report is one thing. Oh, geez, they got those credentials. But if you ever get to do a pen test with a company that does something called a ride along or something where come on site, we'll work with you. And if we do something interesting, we'll show you. That is a eye-opening, visceral moment for people where the pen tester will show them the three things they did that don't seem that practical or possible. And suddenly they are the domain admin on that device, right? It's over. As a pen test, right? One way to prove that you have gotten these privileges are you add yourself to another group to see if they'll detect it, right? It's a blatant, we're here, have a nice day. But you don't need to, right? If that is what you are relying on to determine that an attacker has gained access to your environment because they added a new identity into that domain admins group, you're unprepared, right? That's just a nicety as a pen tester. As soon as I can become Jimmy, domain admin, I can do whatever I want as Jimmy, and you probably aren't auditing it well enough to know what's going on if all you're relying on is group membership changes.
So I couldn't tell the difference between good Jimmy and evil Jimmy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Poor Jimmy.
Poor Jimmy.
I think one of the issues, though, is that when you add those kinds of additional controls, like somebody else has to sign off on this credential or this access, you introduce friction into workflow, and that tends to overwhelm people's desire to build a secure environment.
I agree. And that's why in my perfect world, I would have those checks. And I can understand that people don't want to have them, because especially if you're thinking of an emergency, and that's definitely a limiting factor for an emergency. Agreed. You know, we need to be able to get in right now to do something. And if I have to have somebody approve me, then we're going to have a problem. Or if something goes wrong where that system is no longer working properly, we're locked out.
Yeah.
Definitely big issues.
Or if that approver got hit by a bus.
Okay. Have more than one approver, please.
That's what I mean, though. I feel like it starts to spiral out of control.
Yeah. But I've seen some organizations implement, and I don't know the details of it, but I've seen like automated ticket flows where they can go internally and work through like an internal approval thing that then can be the, I'm air quoting, like the authenticating entity. The workflow is really the authenticating entity, not a human sitting maybe at lunch instead of their desk right that moment.
Yep, it can be. And you can put some safeguards in there, especially if you're using CyberArk or some of the larger products that will track what you're doing and revoke you, right? You can put the safeguards in. You're an administrator for this long, and then we're going to pull it back, perhaps, right? If you don't want to have that workflow, which I understand because it slows things down, that goes back to the you need to have MFA, right? You need to have that second check, not just a password, not just allow SSO into those systems. Put some other checks of some kind before it works. But then also have a break glass account. We seem to have forgotten about these. And I understand because they're bad. They're shared accounts. You don't know who's using them necessarily if they have the password, but break glass accounts are just as vital as they've ever been.
But you could, if you have a limited number, you could put specific monitoring in place for that.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You hit it before I could. I'm like, you should know if those accounts are being used and track what they're doing. If it shows up suddenly, you know, alarm bells are everywhere, red lights, everything that, you know, it's bad. But yes, break glass accounts are incredibly important, especially as we think about how these systems are being built and the interdependencies on each other, right?
I have a question. At what point, because I think technical people think in these like step up of privilege with some type of step up of authentication. I don't mean as a process, but as a tiers maybe. So regular user, regular passphrase of a certain length and whatever rotation you feel is reasonable. And then, you know, multi-factor for some set of things as we work our way up. And then of course, in multi-factor, we've got, you know, phishing, normal things for public like SMS, which, you know, I get that SMS is not the most secure thing. However, for your normal user, it's definitely better than nothing. And it's probably the reasonable option. But getting into like admin as a pen tester, where are the lines between, we've talked about separation of accounts, multi-factor, where are the lines of like multi-factor separation of accounts, working our way up to brokered access and then like actual physical tokens?
I am a fan of physical tokens. I believe in all of the different options, depending on what you're trying to secure, right? There is never a one size fits all, right? There shouldn't be. It gets too expensive, too hard to manage. The thing is, all of those solutions, MFA, regardless of what you're using, all of those are protecting against me knowing your password, me getting your password. And clearly, the more sensitive the account, the stronger MFA you want to have. One big downfall about Microsoft and Active Directory is it doesn't support this natively. You need a third-party product unless you want to start doing smart cards, in which case you're signing up for even bigger problems because now you need to deal with smart cards and certificates and revoking and issuing, and it gets bad very quickly. So you need a third-party product. But once again, I go back to all of that is protecting against the fact that I have gotten your password somehow. If you use a highly privileged account on a less secure device and I get admin to it, I don't need your password to become you. I just become you at that moment.
Because of cache, tokens.
Exactly. Tokens, things like that. When you log in, your token, your permissions are downloaded to memory. And then once you log out, at some point in time, Microsoft is going to clear that out of memory. And I can't give you a specific of how quickly or not.
Are these seconds, minutes, hours, days? Like, what's the range here?
So I've logged into a device shortly after somebody has logged off and they've been gone. And I've logged on to a device hours later and they've still been there. So I have no good quantification of how quickly they'll be removed.
That definitely puts a little wrinkle on things.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say, right? And that's why I don't know. And especially if you allow cache credentials, it gets even worse. You shouldn't for admin stuff. But if I can get in close enough to you and it hasn't been cleared or the box hasn't been rebooted to actually be sure they're clear, I can become you. And then it doesn't make a difference. You've already done the MFA checks, right? You've already gotten past that step. And so we're running around as you again. And that's why the tiering, or the term I got from a different client and I like because it sounds so much cooler to me, a credential compartmentalization.
Ooh.
Right? Isn't that better than account tiering?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have that set up, if I can't get to where you're logged in, I can't get to you. I can't become you. And then I need to find your password somehow and leverage it. And hopefully, if you have multiple accounts, you aren't using the same password on all those accounts, which we see too often in my case, right? You get on the network, you compromise a device, you start querying AD, and you find out who the admins are, and then you find out what the regular accounts are. And then you go after the regular accounts if you can't get to the admin accounts. And then you get it. Maybe you get their password somehow. You get a hash, you crack it, whatever it is. And then you just for fun, try and log in with those credentials on their admin account. And it works. And you feel really bad.
How do you feel about, sorry, I'm going to go on a slight, like short side quest, just really short. Let's keep it short. But I have to know, because I hear conflicting information from people. How do you feel about users being local admins on their machines? Hard no, sometimes okay, or not really a problem because there's other issues.
I don't want to say hard no, because there's always that exception, right? CISSP, all of those wonderful things will say there is no definitive always. I am not a fan of normal users being an administrator on their device. Then we fall into these other caveats where you're like, well, maybe they need to, right? Because they need to install printers, which is not necessarily the easiest thing to allow them to do, or other devices. And you spiral into this problem. If you don't have a good support mannerism method to do support on these devices, you may have to allow it. Mm-hmm. But then I would go to not with their real account, right? With the one they log in every day, you do something with a local administrator account on the device, and you can give them the credentials for that, and they can be changed separately, right? So that is a temporary thing that they use, and then you can change it, or it will change on its own after a period of time. So regular users, please, not on a day-to-day basis. While endpoint tools, endpoint protection tools are getting much, much better, they're still not perfect, right? And you're relying a lot on CrowdStrike or Defender for endpoint, which is a good tool if it's managed. I'm not knocking it, right? If you're relying on endpoint protection to protect you and that alone, you're not really protecting yourself.
Yeah.
You have a good base, but it's still not as everything you need. So I do understand the need that sometimes users need to do something that requires admin access.
I'm in the same camp, but again, I'm not a Microsoft admin, so I don't know all the pros and cons, but I've heard professionals who work in this space say everything from you really shouldn't do it. And if you, just like you said, if you do, there's other things to layer with that, to, you know, a handful of people that have just been like, you should have so many other things layered in your defense that giving users local admin should never be an issue. And I've never really bought into that. I haven't seen enough data for that, but I was just curious of your opinion with that, because too many accidents happen with that.
Correct. Yeah. I've seen too many issues arise from that one person having admin access somewhere. And on our tests, you aren't an admin anywhere except for this one box, right? With a normal user. And that becomes the foothold. That becomes the place where we start to make that trusted device less secure. It might not be quick. It may not be instantaneously. It's ours, right? It might be we need to work slowly and start making changes. And once again, you're relying on the endpoint protection to catch everything and notify you and all of these extra steps. And maybe it does, but maybe it doesn't, right? It's that eggs in one basket idea. And I'm not a fan of that when I think about security. I like layers. I don't want to trust one thing or a layer of similar things maybe to do it.
You like compartments.
I do, especially with my credentials, right? Yes.
We've been talking sort of about technical techniques. I'm curious if social engineering still plays a role when you're pen testing, particularly as you're trying to get, you know, credentials.
Yes and no. From a pen test perspective, I am not a fan of doing phishing exercises or even spear phishing for a couple of reasons. One, we're testing one of two things when we do this. We're either A, testing Proofpoint or other tools, Google, Defender, for the cloud, whatever. We're testing those tools on catching us as being malicious and marking us as spam, or we're trusting that all of our users are absolutely able to pick a fish all the time. Uh-huh. We know this is false, okay? I guarantee option B is false. And it's not because they're intentionally clicking links, right? There are too many good templates, too many good ways of building a fish that people will do it. People are going to click the link, okay? We have trained everybody to click links. Right? Hey, it's time for you to sign up for your benefits. Go here, right? Click the link. Here's the ticket today. Here's the link to the ticket. We are training our people to click links. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So then what you're paying a pen tester is to try to bypass one of these tools that do their jobs very well. That, in my mind, is not a good place to spend your money during a pen test. Uh-huh. So then you're like, okay, let's allow you through those controls. And then we go back to option B, right? So phishing is absolutely a big entry method. Absolutely. It depends on what controls you are trying to validate. If you want to validate, we have all these controls that don't allow outbound communications, that we want to make sure endpoint protection is going to somehow find those communication paths, right? Those C2 frameworks, all of those. Okay, that's a valid one. But we don't need a fish to do it either. We could work with you to have it try, but we can do the fish part. If it's just we want to see if phishing works, that doesn't seem like a good use.
Now, Eric, hang on. You keep talking about phishing, but I've heard some stories from your crew.
We have had some very, very successful campaigns. I completely agree. We will do it.
I'm saying things that are not phishing, like phone calls, spoofed help desk calls, weird, you know.
Yes, phishing. That's even worse for me. I have great troubles with that part. We'll do it. And yes, we have had great success with social engineering. But it also goes back to your goals, right? If you have good security awareness training, especially for help desk and things like that, where you have these checks that are supposed to be followed, it shouldn't work well.
Like, don't let the level tier 1 reset an admin account.
Right. Yeah. They shouldn't have that capability to begin with. Okay. that goes back to the compartmentalization thing again altogether, right? We blur the lines of who's supposed to be able to do what. Your tier one help desk should be able to help a normal user, but they should not have the ability to reset a, you know, highly privileged account, right? Maybe not even their own. We're both on the help desk. I shouldn't be able to reset your password. You know, it takes somebody with more permissions to do that if necessary. So social engineering is absolutely a valid tactic, but it's wetware versus your other controls, right? If you want to see how those other controls can do against it, let's talk, absolutely. But I would rather you focus our efforts on other things than that aspect, if there's questions about your environment at all.
Before we wrap up with the last piece, I have to tell you that I just, while you were answering that, asked ChatGPT about other futuristic ways, other phrases for compartmentalization. And it came up with cyber segmentation matrix. Ooh. And a hyper partitioning architecture.
Oh man.
Ooh, those are also nice.
I feel like we should just lick these before like Gartner gets a hold of them. Oh, modular shielding.
Ooh.
Dang, that's some good marketing right there. Yeah. So Eric, we've taken up a lot of your time and we appreciate it. There was something that we had been talking about as we prepped for the show together that you just wanted to mention to folks, since we are talking about Active Directory, Entra ID, essentially identity management systems, that if the worst happens and you are in some kind of recovery event, things you should be thinking about in regard to AD or Entra.
Oh, absolutely. So yes, ransomware is there. It's going to be here for a long time. It's affecting people. It's in the news all the time. And one of the common questions that we get when we're doing a pen test or we're talking to people is, how can we be sure we're ready for ransomware? There's two parts to that. Number one, the recovery part, very important, and the focus of your question. So what we see typically when we're talking to people about the recovery strategies are, they have great recovery strategies for their applications. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're resilient. We can recover it. We know how. We have documentation. We're good to go. Except all of that documentation is based upon assumptions that other critical infrastructure is up and available, like Active Directory. Mm-hmm. If your Active Directory goes down, you as an organization, whoever your business continuity people are, the high-level recovery strategy needs to have some way of knowing the steps to get your critical infrastructure back online and what the order is. AD has been around for 25 years. Plus or minus a little bit, depending when you put it in, right? And it has become the de facto on-prem authentication source, even for network logins, even for everything, right? It's all coming to here. You're using, yeah, Radius, TACX, things like that, but it's going back into AD, right?
Yep.
So if AD is offline and we need to make changes to firewalls, which you're probably going to have to do so that you can recover your domain controllers, going slightly off tangent, recovering AD has not changed. It is the same as it's always been. You bring one up safely, and then you start promoting the others. You start building your other servers from it. Uh-huh. One domain controller typically cannot handle the load of everybody in your environment trying to use it as soon as it comes back online. So you're probably going to need to make him not be able to talk to people for a little bit, right? But can he come online if the network isn't working properly, right? How do you get onto your switches, routers, your Meraki's, whatever it might be, if they are relying on Active Directory for authentication and AD is offline?
Okay.
Right? But it's everything, that holistic strategy for a business of how do we get our critical infrastructure back online so that we can bring our apps back. And if every recovery is just based on the app can bring itself back, you're missing something and you might run into serious issues.
So fold AD into your planning and testing.
Yes, absolutely. And that is a difficult prospect. Anybody who's done any AD work is going to be yelling at me saying, how do we test this? It's not easy. Quite often it's building a separate environment and restoring in there and making sure you can get it back. But it's not just the restoral of AD. It's once again, me as an AD administrator, what do I need online for me to be able to recover AD? I need to have a network, self-explanatory. I need to be able to get up to my backup solution.
And in the middle of an incident is not the time to try to figure this crap out.
No.
I remember when we used to have like CMDBs, but they've evolved into, you know, other things. And you had all of the interdependencies of layer one up through layer seven in an environment. So you knew all of the pieces, parts that had to feed in. And
JJ, I want to know where you worked. So you had all that information. There's too many places I go. They don't, right? Those first two steps in CIS.
OCD over here.
Okay. You put it in. All right.
Oh, yeah. I've never walked into a customer site that happened. No, because people don't like the D word. Well, documentation and or diagrams.
No. Documentation is afterthought. Yeah. But know what's on your network. Know what's on those devices that's on your network. Step one and two for any security framework you want to use, right? Those are quite often missed. I have too many good stories of people saying, oh yeah, we do vulnerability management. We're set. And we go on and we find these five other devices out there. And they're like, what are they? And we're like, I don't know, but it let us give everything we wanted over here, right? Or, hey, did you know it's already compromised? That's always a hard conversation to have.
We were too late.
Somebody was here before us. Not the virgin sacrifice anymore.
So really, once again, for recovery, have that big plan. Know what you need, how that all builds upon itself, and be sure that's taken into account for your recovery of those apps to meet those timelines to bring them back, right? They have very tight timeframes for your critical apps, and they probably aren't thinking about worst case scenarios.
So Eric, we got into a lot of stuff and I appreciate your time with us. If folks want to get more from you or connect with you online, where can they find you? Are you up to anything else besides doing all this goodness?
So LinkedIn is by far probably the best place to reach me. I do have a X account, but I don't use it very well. I'm not great at this whole social media thing, I admit it. LinkedIn is by far the best way. You can also email me. I like taking questions via email, eric@secureideas.com. LinkedIn, I am attending more conferences as I can. I say that I'm going to be down in Jacksonville in a couple of weeks for a conference, but then I want to get back up into some ISSA things up in Raleigh and other areas, but conferences and LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Eric, so much for joining us. We really appreciate this. It was a great conversation. And of course, thanks to you, the listener, for being here for another episode of Packet Protector. If you have a topic you want us to cover, you can find JJ and I on LinkedIn or at packetpushers.net/community, where we've got a free Slack channel with other IT and security pros. If you have a comment, a correction, or questions, you can reach out to us at packetpushers.net/FU. The FU is for follow-up, and we do appreciate when listeners reach out. Always remember, eat your security vegetables.